comes out of There Is a Solution from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. Please continue to join us each Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Zoom until we are able to all meet again in person. Meeting ID is 222-386-8976. Password is recovered in all capitals. I would now like to introduce tonight's speaker, Jared from Texas. Jared, you can unmute yourself when you're ready. Thank you.
Oh, boy. How's everybody doing this evening? Or morning, I guess, perhaps, if you're in Australia, right? Or somewhere else. Morning, afternoon, evening. God bless you, wherever you might be. My name is Jared Dickey, and I am a recovered alcoholic. God separated me from alcohol September the 5th of 2015, and for that, I am very, very grateful. And I got a little munchkin back at home. I'm actually out of town right now in a dark hotel room. You probably can't really tell, but I got a little munchkin at home who just turned 8, and boy, I tell you what, she's pretty dang grateful that the daddy's free now. I introduce myself as recovered because that is the truth. That's the God honest truth. If you turn onto our title page, you can see that's one of the great promises. It's one of the first great promises in this book. I don't say it to be different than anybody or to cause contention or anything like that. I don't suffer from some sort of false humility that I'm going to be recovering, sick and suffering, struggling one silly day at a time. I've taken 12 steps. I've had a spiritual awakening as the result of those steps. And I no longer think about drinking. I no longer think about not drinking. By God's grace, I've been placed in a position of neutrality. So I guess before I get rattling off and stuff, I'd just like to thank the group for extending an invitation. I'd like to thank Paul and everybody else who has been doing this every Wednesday night. I mean, you guys have had a swell group of well-rounded folks come in here and talk. And boy, Paul was giving me some grief the other day. He was saying, you know, you're going to have to put on your big boy britches. Because all the other guys who have come in, many of them, I though I'm not sponsored by them, I still see them as spiritual teachers. People like Chris and Myers and Peter, and I listened to all the other podcasts and stuff. And man, there was some great stuff. So it's gonna be a hard deal to follow up. But you know what? I usually don't plan before I go give a talk, or if I'm asked to give a talk. I say a simple prayer: God, guide my spirit, guide my words, guide their ears and their hearts. And then we go to it and try to let God do what he does. So obviously we're talking about steps 8 and 9 this evening. And before we get into that, I guess I'm just going to recap in my own special way, you know, everything that we have, that has brought us up to this point. Okay. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Dash, that our lives have become unmanageable. I have no power, choice, or control in the body once I put alcohol in. And unfortunately, if that was my only problem, simple thing is just don't drink. But now I have no power, choice, or control in the mind to keep me from putting it in. And because of this internal condition, not because of external circumstances, life is so unsatisfactory that I'm left with no other option but to pick up a drink. Right. So what we have to understand is that alcoholism is an internal condition. It is not an external one. External circumstances didn't cause it. External circumstances are not going to fix it, right? And many times we seek an external solution to fix an internal problem, and those things may work up until the point that they don't. Then my mind says, guess what? This sucks. And I'm right back into the bottle again, right? So if I'm powerless, my life is unmanageable, then it would seem to me that, like on page 45, they allude, basically, lack of power is my dilemma. So I need to get to the power as fast as possible. The steps are meant to be worked rapidly. They throw in all sorts of words in there, at once, immediately, next, vigorous, right? When I think of vigorous, it's like, you know, let's go to it, right? I need to tackle all of these steps with the desperation of the drowning man. And because for a drowning man, life is boiled down to two purposes or two ideas. Breathe air, not water. Guess what? I want to get to shore and breathe air immediately. Okay. And I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to go to any length to be able to do that. So in step three, we made a decision to turn our will and lives over to the care of God as we understood him. If I knew how to do that back in the day, I would have been doing it, right? You'd see me walking down on the street and you're like, hey, Jared, what are you doing? Oh, I'm just turning it over today. No, I'm not doing that, right? Taking the rest of the steps shows me how to turn my will and life over to the care of God as I understand him, right? So step three is just a simple decision. Can I make a commitment? Can I make a commitment to be pulled up root and branch and to be placed in new soil, to go through the rest of the steps? Now, many of us in step two, maybe we come to something, we already have a belief in God and all that stuff, but what is the difference in most of us is this connection to God. Within me, there's all sorts of old ideas, misconceptions, misperceptions of what I think God is, what I think relationships are, who I think I am, so on and so forth. There's prejudice, right? Tack on the spiritual malady stuff, you know, and the selfish and self-centeredness. All of these things within me are blocking me off from fully experiencing God, from getting connected to God. So what do I need to do? Just to kind of give an analogy, or I guess personify the work, should we say, is that, you know, if I picture myself as like a glass, right? I'll be 40 years old here in September, just to date myself. And let's say, for instance, I got a 40-year-old glass of water right here. Would anybody here drink a 40-year-old glass of water? No? Why not? It's nothing wrong with the glass, but what's inside of it, that's the nasty stuff, right? There's little flies flying around. There's a little hair hanging off, you know. That's not aroma. That's stank, right? And all the stuff within that cup is the stuff that's blocking me off from fully experiencing God. And so the rest of the work, steps 4 through 9, particularly 4 through 7, is an emptying out. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with the glass. The glass can be made to be emptied out and then cleaned out, okay? So once I'm emptied out, I uncover, discover, and discard the things within me that are inside the glass, I ask God to remove them. It's pretty plain and simple, right? So how do I do a good third step? I start putting pen to paper and I start working on my fourth step. How do I do a good fourth? I call up my sponsor and I arrange an appointment and we meet up and we talk about it. How do I do a good six? I hit my knees and turn all these things over to God, right? Which then brings us to step eight. Which means, and I'll just start over here on page 76. So basically what I'm going to do tonight is I'll get into a little bit of mechanics. We all know how to read the book. I'm not going to interpret the book, but what I would like to also speak on is just experientially, how some of these amends end up looking. And not only that, perhaps from a sponsorship standpoint, some various, you know, guidelines to point out and stuff like that. So we will see where God takes us. So it says, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we've harmed and to whom we're willing to make amends. Where on earth do I get this list? Well, I have it in my fourth step, okay? There oftentimes may be people who we have harmed that didn't end up on our fourth step, okay? So don't go out there and burn your fourth step and have some big kumbaya, you know, session or something like that. Hang on to that because you're probably going to need it, all right? So we're building a list. All this eight-step list is, it's just like a grocery list. Anybody can make a grocery list. I need butter, eggs, you know, so on and so forth. It's as simple as that. I'm pulling all of these people off the fourth step, and then I bring God into this and say, whose name needs to be on this list, okay? And just as simple as it is with our fourth step, when I bring God into this, it becomes spiritually perfect. The names just spill off, you know, onto the page from my pen. So that being said, it goes on to say, we made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. Okay. Sounds pretty simple, but like any good alcoholic, we're going to try to overcomplicate it, right? Why is that? Because I'm going to project. I'm going to think about all the things that they're going to ask me to do. I'm going to, you know, sit here and flounder around wondering, you know, what's it going to look like, all that kind of stuff. So fortunately, the book lays out precisely how these amends need to look, what sort of requirements or conditions we need to meet in order to make these amends. And then they give us various examples, which is not necessarily an end-all be-all, but they're general examples of some amends that we might encounter when going out to repair the damage done in the past. So that being said, let me see, make sure I'm all plugged in. Okay. So if we, I'll just get there real quick. So if we look at the actual step, it says we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Okay. But before we go into this, we need to look at one key word on the back of step 8, which is we came willing to make amends to them all, right? Not just the ones that are easy, not just the ones that'll make me feel better. None of that. I need to be willing to make amends to them all. And fortunately, whenever I first came through this, I'll give you a little background about myself, is I had mentioned I was separated from alcohol September the 5th of 2015. And that was a Sunday. I ended up calling my sponsor and I said, hey, you know, I'm done with this. I'm ready to go. I'll do whatever you want me to. Just tell me what we need to do. Actually, I'll be a little bit more honest about that. I called him up and I was like, JK, I'm all snotting and everything all over myself. And he was like, I got you, buddy. All right, big boy, let's see what your feet are going to do. You meet me at the group on Tuesday. We recap some step one stuff. Did 2 and got on our knees, did a third step prayer. He gave me instructions for 4. On day 9 of sobriety, I met up with him. I did my 5th step, went home and spent my hour, did 6 and 7. I made an 8 step list and contacted him and got approval to go off and make some amends that day. Later on that evening, I was asked to go carry the message to some folks at a treatment center or whatever. Might not have had anything to transmit at that moment, but I stayed afterwards and I talked to those guys and I let them know about my experience that day. And on the way home, my truck wheels never touched the ground. I know it sounds kind of cliche, but that's exactly what it was like. And I knew from that point on, I did not ever have to pick up another drink again. Since then, I haven't thought about drinking, right? So we're talking about 5 through 12 in one day, all right? Why did that have to happen? Well, how did it happen, I guess, is probably a better question, is because I was desperate, right? I'd gotten my teeth kicked in for years and years on end, and I became completely desperate. And that's why step one is basically, it is so absolutely important, because what happens in the rest of the work is contingent on my step one experience. And as I even progress through the work, step one becomes more and more prevalent. Does making these amends have anything to do with me picking up another drink? Does living in the disciplines of what the book talks about later on have anything to do with me picking up another drink? Moreover, does me making all of these amends have anything to do with me picking up another drink? Whenever I first got sober, I had made my 8-step list and I probably had about 45, 50 names on it, something like that. And so I talked with my sponsor, JK, and I said, hey, you know, this is what we got and stuff. And what he helped me do was organize it, because I was way overwhelmed. My heart felt like it was about to beat through my chest, you know what I mean? And so what we did, and I will tell you this going in the door, this is not in the book, but it is something, it is a tool that at least helped me see the end game, should I put it that way. I just arranged these amends in like 3 different columns. One was low-hanging fruit. Who can I go out and make amends to today, right? The second column was basically, you know, some small financial amends, people who still smart from my indiscretions, and maybe people who I gotta look up. I gotta go out and find them. Third column was kind of like the no way in hell column, which meant like logistically they're kind of hard to do, large financial amends, or people who just completely don't want to see me, right? And this kind of helped me gear up to make the hard ones, if that really makes sense. As I had said before, it's not in the book, but what ended up happening is that I knocked out some of this low-hanging fruit, right? And I was taking action. God saw that I was taking action. And the more action that I take, the more faith that I get. The more faith that I get, the ones in this little second column don't seem so hard. When I start knocking out the ones in that column, guess what? The ones in the third column, they don't seem really that hard at all either, right? Because I now begin to start seeing God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Things are happening all over the place. And that's kind of a cool deal, is that, you know, the spiritual life doesn't necessarily make any sense. You know, if I do a financial amends over here, why is it that my home life gets better? You know, or if I do, you know, a personal work amends over here, somehow my financial life gets better. It's a crazy deal. And it's not for me to know or for me to understand, because that's God's deal. All it is for me is to do. And one key piece of information that my sponsor always gave me, he's like, dude, don't think, just do, right? So going into this stuff on page 77, it gives us kind of a little bit of instructions about leading with the chin, right? I'm not going to just show up to some folks to make amends and start, you know, claiming, you know, spiritual upheaval and all sorts of great stuff. Because people are going to say the exact same thing that they did, or that Bill did with Ebby, you know, once an alcoholic crackpot, now a religious nut, you know, that kind of thing. It says, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and to the people about us. Now, you go to any contemporary AA meeting and you ask what our real purpose is, they're going to say to be of maximum service. But it doesn't say that. It says to fit ourselves. Right? So I have to be willing to be disciplined. There is some discipline in the ninth step as well as 10, 11, and 12. And so I have to be willing to go to any length. I have to be willing to suit up and show up with a spirit of willingness and continue to chop wood and carry water, do the things necessary for me to survive today and to go out and bear witness to what God has done for me. They've already given us kind of a warning about leading with the chin and stuff like that, but I'll get to the first two conditions of amends, which we find one at the end of the first paragraph on page 77. It says, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries. Okay, so this is one of our first conditions, is that he's going to be more impressed by a sincere desire to set right the wrong. I have to bring the utmost sincerity into this. Oftentimes when people are making amends, they'll use, you know, cards to keep themselves organized, or maybe they'll use a piece of paper or something like that. If I show up to these folks and I read off of a card or read off of a script, I'm going to sound like a robot. Where is the sincerity in that? What I need to do is I need to bring God into this, and I need to speak from the heart. Right? I know how badly I treated them, and I need to make that right. So this is also probably a good point to talk about our motives and intentions. So the book tells me in this amends process that consultation with others, i.e. our sponsor, is paramount when it comes to this. Why is that? Because oftentimes, when we're going through this amends process, the attempt is still continue to crush ego. But there may be times whenever in my mind, I'm going out to try to gain something, or maybe to get back in the big bed, or perhaps to feel better, maybe to rekindle an old relationship. If my motives are aligned that way, guess what I'm already doing? Who am I already thinking about? I'm thinking about myself. Right? And so that's why I need to contact my sponsor before I go off and make some of these amends. And it's like, okay, this is what's happening. This is what we're going to do to make sure that my intentions and my motives are aligned. So moving on, the second condition for amends, it goes down to the second to last paragraph, the very end sentence. It says, we go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. I'll get it out at some point. So that is our second condition. By definition, amends means to make right. We don't go to people and we say, I'm sorry. I don't go to people and say, I apologize. That's not an amends, right? They know we're sorry. As it says a little bit later, when in regards to the family, a remorseful mumbling that we're sorry just won't fit the bill. Anybody who I've trudged, you know, through the mud for years and years and years, or even in just short instances, they're going to know that I'm sorry, right? But what am I going to do to make that right, to set right the wrongs, to clean up my side of the street, okay? So when I make this approach, I'm going to say something like, what can I do to make this right? I regret the way I treated you, so on and so forth. What can I do to make this right between us? Okay? That's an amends. So moving on, they kind of give us instructions or you know, in a general way, several different instances of amends that we might have to make. Perhaps the person that we hated, how do we approach that type of person? By God's grace, I was able to make an amends like that. And in my own personal experience, you know, what turned out was actually pretty amazing. I approached this couple that, you know, hate is a really strong word. I would just say didn't get along with, didn't like, you know, wasn't a fan of, that kind of thing. I expressed my regret in how I treated them. And I told them, you know, nobody should be treated that way. I even treated your kids poorly, and you guys don't deserve that. What can I do to make this right? And they looked at me, and they said, what is this thing that you're doing? I said, well, you know, as part of my recovery, my job is to clean up the damage that I've done in the past. I'm making amends. And they said, wow, this is kind of a cool deal. You know, I've hurt people in the past, but I think I need to do this too. And I was blown away. These people aren't in the program. They're not alcoholics. They're not drug addicts, nothing. But whatever they saw working in me, because I had a sincere desire to right the wrong, not only that, hopefully God was working through me. Whatever it did, it touched their spirit. And they understood that they had harmed some people in the past and they wanted to go out and do the exact same thing. That's pretty cool. I didn't do any of that, right? So it also talks about owing people money. Now this can look a lot of different ways. In short, I'll use my buddy Paul as an example. If I borrowed $100 from Paul long time ago and, I show up to him and I just say, oh, you know, I regret stealing some or borrowing some money from you. What can I do to make that right? But I don't have anything to show for it. What's Paul going to think? I want my $100, right? It's pretty dang simple. Oftentimes people use the other analogy about this infamous heirloom toaster, right? I had this amazing toaster that was given to me by my great-great-grandmother and you stole it and went and pawned it, you know? If that's the case, I want my toaster, right? So it gives us examples of how we want to arrange the best deal that we can. If all I can make is $10, you know, a month to pay Paul back, guess what? Come hell or high water, I'm bringing Paul $10 every single month, every week, or whatever the best arrangement might be. But check this out. If I show up at the meeting and Paul sees me with a brand new pair of Nikes on, I'm sure he's going to think, wow, you can buy a new pair of Nikes, but you can't pay me my money back. Guess who I'm still stealing from? I'm still stealing from him. The money that I owe him, I'm using for myself, right? Now, that's not saying let's go out here and starve ourselves or anything like that. If I have enough to survive, you know what I mean, and put food in my belly, pay the rent and all that good stuff, super. But I need to begin saving up so that I can start making some of these financial amends, right? It goes on to talk about some criminal offenses. You know what? Backtracking real quick, I moved to talk about this one piece. So in the midst of the drinking and stuff like that, the illness kind of progressed to me stealing, right? It's not something that I'm proud of. It is not a prerequisite to being an alcoholic, stealing or anything like that. But That's just where it ended up taking me, because by this time I'm not working. I was blackballed in the industry that I was working in, spending up money that I don't have. And, you know, like my wife's taking out my credit cards and all that kind of stuff. So I resorted to just going to my local grocery store, and I would steal those little boxes of wine, you know what I mean? And one day in the midst of all of this, the owner of the store, she caught me doing it, and she kicked me out. She like was holding me by the arm, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, "I don't know what to tell you, but just don't come back." And, you know, of course I'm in a psychosis of some sort. So I just went over to the Walmart and stole from them. But later on, fast forward, you know, a few years, I get sober. I know I need to go make financial amends to this woman and to their store. So I did a little bit of mathematical gymnastics, you know what I mean? And I put pen to paper of what I stole, the period to which I stole it, and the quantity to which I stole, and how many times a day. So I know that's like, I don't even want to think about it right now, but somehow I was able to do it, right? So I tallied up an amount, right, with a little bit of interest. I approached this woman. I made the arrangement, asked her if I could meet with her. She said, yes, come on by. So in all of this, of course, I obtained some permission from my wife, because, you know, the book tells us we don't go off and make these amends, you know, except when to do so were to injure them or others, right? The others is not me, right? The others is the people about me, right? I can't go off and make an amends when, you know, it's going to cause my family some harm. Or if I get arrested, guess what? Now I'm not making any money to contribute, you know, or to be a father to my daughter. So also where sponsorship is key in this point. To make a long story short, I approached this woman and I told her, because mind you, this is our family store, our family grocery store. She knew my wife. She knew my daughter by name. She knew me. And she recognized me as soon as I walked in the door. We sat down and she said, "How can I help you?" And I said, "My name's Jared and I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been sober for this long. And as part of my recovery, my job is to clean up the damage that I've done in the past. You had treated my family so well, and I turn around and spat in your face by stealing alcohol from your store. No person deserves to be treated that way, and I want you to know I sincerely regret that. I've tallied up an amount of what I stole. I pushed it in front of her, and I'd like to know, is there anything else that I can do to make this right between us?" And she looked at me, and she paused for a second, and then tears started rolling down her face, and she got me going too, and we're sitting here, you know, like she were holding hands or whatever, and she says, "Baby, it takes a big person to admit that they're wrong, but nobody ever comes and tries to make it right. I thank you for this. I'm going to put this in the register. And I just want you to know you and your family are welcome back in my store anytime. I hope to see you soon." You know, I didn't expect any of that, you know. And it's kind of funny how, you know, especially when you're brand spanking new, how we'll catastrophize or project on what's going to end up happening, you know, in the end game. What are they going to ask me to do when I make amends? You know, are they going to ask me to, you know, drop and do 20 push-ups or go back to treatment for another 30 days? You know, something like that. But last one, I actually really thought about that. My sponsor was like, "Dude, you trust God?" I said, "Yes." He said, "God's everything or else he's nothing, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Okay." That's all he said. Because that's exactly what we're on the basis of. You know, I mean, it talks about that back when we're doing inventory, we're on a basis of trusting and relying upon God. And if there's a piece of advice or anything that I can give in going in and making these amends, the biggest one is take God with you. Don't leave him out in the car, you know, whenever you're running in to go make the amends. Don't leave him back at home. Say a prayer. Get prayed up. And just like inventory, guess what? It ends up being spiritually perfect, the way that God intended. You know, it's not for me to know the outcome. It's not for me to catastrophize about the outcome. It's only for me to go in there and repair the damage done in the past. So moving on, it reminds us again that we were willing to go to any lengths. And here's the thing is any length is any length, right? It is not for me to determine what any length looks like. Now, the book lays out in many, many places what these any lengths looks like. But guess what? Ultimately, God is the one who decides what those any lengths will end up being. And I have to be willing to do it. So it goes on to talk about, you know, what happens if other people are involved, that kind of thing. Obviously, I need to obtain some permission if I'm going to go off and make some of these amends, especially if it's like a criminal offense. Me and a buddy went and robbed a store, and guess what? I get sober. He's still out, you know, in the thick of it, and I want to go make amends. Guess what? I need to talk to this guy first, you know, because I can't go off and do that just to save my own skin. Then it goes on to talk about, you know, if we there's a little section there about basically character assassination. You know what I mean? I said some words about somebody that I probably shouldn't have to another person. Guess what? I need to make those things right. Moreover, the people who I said those things to about the other guy, I got to make amends to those people too. So now I had told you that I, you know, broke this list down to, you know, these three little columns or whatever. And what I was given to work with was around between like 40 and 60 amends in the beginning. And as I started plugging them away, you know, I'm talking back and forth with my sponsor about it. You know what I mean? We're knocking them out. And he said, well, let me ask you this. Did you put people on there who you harmed indirectly? I'm like, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, think about it this way. You're drinking yourself to death and you harm your wife. Who does she turn to for a shoulder to cry on? Better yet, you got a little girl at home. Who has to watch her because you're not fit enough to be able to take care of her? My mind opened a little bit and I'm like, oh man. Okay. So, you know, that added like another 30, 40, you know, names on there. That means, you know, who had to clean up my mess whenever I was out doing what I was doing, living life on self-will. You know, let's say I got a position at a restaurant or whatever, and I can't make my shift because I'm out drinking myself to death. Who has to cover my shift, right? Who are the people who had to get off their day off and come in and take over, right? I owe those people amends as well. Now, in my own personal experience, if I can't watch my daughter, guess what? Guess who has to? One of my wife's friends, my in-laws, you know, coworkers, somebody like that. Not only that, she's, you know, I've driven her crazy. And so now she's not only a fit worker. Guess what? I owe her boss an amends as well because she can't do her job 100% because who she's worried about? Who is she worrying about? Me. Right? So oftentimes these things reveal themselves through prayer and meditation. And that kind of brings me to my next part is this power of prayer and meditation. I was sitting in meditation one day and it came to me that if I worked with you between the years of like 2010 to 2015, chances are I owe you an amends. At the very least, your life was not enriched by the experience between 2010 and 2015. I work in the film business as an assistant director. And so I basically run the set. And one of my primary jobs is safety. Now I'm out here drinking myself to death, showing up to work all blacked out and stuff like that. How on earth can I keep people safe? I put people's lives at stake, millions of dollars at stake, you know, the job in jeopardy, relationships, you name it, I did it. So when this came to light, I knew that it was started to get a little overwhelming, you know, and my list got increased exponentially. And, but the point that I want to make is that God gave me in the beginning what he saw that I could work with. He gave me the 45 or the 50 or whatever to start off with. He saw me take an action. I started to get a little bit more faith. And so he gave me a little bit more, the indirect amends. You know, I started knocking some of those out, and guess what? The indirect harms. Started knocking some of those out, and then guess what? He laid it on me. He saw I was on the path, and he didn't load it all up on me at one time because he knew, you know, he probably said, I'm not going to do this to this guy because it'll break his back, you know? So he gave me what he did at that time. So I'd like to kind of move into experientially what it looks like to make these amends. Obviously, they take innumerable forms. And I had told you that my list, it got really, really big. To this day, I have made every amends that I'm consciously aware of, with the exception of two, and that's 173 direct face-to-face amends. Which is, I don't say that in a bragging fashion. I say it because, back in the day, I had a little checklist, and I'm marking people off, and I stopped marking people off, but I'm still out there making amends and stuff like that. And, you know, I was going through some long-term and short-term effects of, you know, booze and stuff like that. And so my mind or my memory wasn't all there. And sometimes I'd approach people a second time and they were like, you okay? I'm like, oh, yep. Yeah. Sorry. We did talk about this last month. So I had to start getting more diligent about the list and stuff like that and checking everything off. So one day I went through the list and I counted everybody up and I called my sponsor and I'm like, hey, JK, check this out, dude. I've made like, you know, 170 amends. And he's like, oh, that's really great, dude. But check this out. Throughout your time of living life on self-will, you've screwed over 170 of God's kids. I'm like, oh, man. Yeah, you're right. And he said, hey, don't worry about it. Let's just keep on going, right? Don't think, just do. Let's keep rocking it out. And so I did. So let's say, for instance, I'm just kind of got a little rubric that I'll probably end up sharing with you guys a little bit later. Obviously, I have to make an arrangement, right? I've got my list in front of me. I got to start either strapping on my shoes to go, you know, hit door to door, or I might need to arrange an appointment with some folks. So how am I going to do that? Well, I'm probably going to call these folks up. Hey, there's some harms that I caused you in the past. Could I meet with you for just a few minutes to talk about these? And I make a schedule out of it. There's only been one time that someone has said, you know what, I don't have the time. Say what you need to say now. So guess what? If the Spirit calls, I go. That's God's timing right there. I never, ever, ever recommend anybody make any amends over the phone. But guess what? God called me to do it at that time. So I did it. Otherwise, we're going to arrange an appointment, which means I might have to go to this person's office. I might end up meeting them for coffee. I might end up doing lunch or dinner, something like that. But I'm not going to go and do this when it's going to take away from something else, right? If I end up seeing a guy that I owe amends to at his daughter's birthday party, I'm not going to steal away from his daughter's birthday party. That's selfish, right? I need to wait for God's timing, okay? Or arrange a time to which we can solely talk about this matter right here, okay? So let's assume, for instance, that I have this person in front of me, right? I'm made this commitment to be there. And on a path of rigorous honesty, my word means everything. If I tell you I'm going to meet you at 7:10, you know, PM, guess what? I'm going to be there at 7 o'clock, right? To keep my word, because my word means everything. And my actions speak louder than that as well. So we're face to face now. And what's the first thing I'm going to do? Well, I'm going to tell you, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for meeting me here. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you taking the time out to come meet me here. And then what am I going to do? I'm going to tell them why I'm here. It's no secret that I've been a slave to alcohol for many, many years. I think you have a general idea of what I've been through. I'm in recovery now. I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And as part of my recovery, my job is to set right the wrongs that I've made in the past, right? This third part, guess what I'm going to do? I'm now going to go into the physical amends. I'm going to tell them exactly what I did to harm them. I'm going to tell them, you know, it was selfish of me to do this. I was dishonest with you. I lied. I cheated you. Whatever, you know, the harm may be. And then I'm going to tell them, I regret treating you that way. No human should be treated the way that I treated you. And guess what? I treated you like garbage. I want you to know I regret that. What can I do to make that right between us? And then guess what? I'm going to listen. I'm just going to be quiet. Now, provides them the opportunity to get everything out that they might need to say. And I'm just going to sit and listen. I don't retaliate. I don't argue. Right? And sometimes, depending on the situation, I might ask again after they've said their piece, are there any other harms or any other ways that I harmed you that I didn't mention? And then I sit quiet again, just let them talk. And then after that, basically, I'm going to thank them again for their time. But before I leave this meeting, I'm going to offer up to be of service to anybody, to them, to anybody else. I'm going to tell them, you know, look, well, as part of my recovery, my job is to help other people who were struggling just the same way I was. If you know anyone else who has had problems with alcohol, brothers, sisters, cousins, doesn't matter, please give them my name and number. And if there's any way that I can help them, I certainly will. The coolest part about this is that, you know, so many things have happened as a result of this. Many people, you know, have turned me on to some of their family members or to a coworker, or they said, here, you know, this person is in my life. They really need some help. Can you give them a call? Absolutely. You know, absolutely. So before I go into the next deal, what we got to look for, look at this actual piece of amends. Whatever they ask me to do to make things right, I have to be willing to do. Right? Remember, we said we were willing to go to any length. Now, chances are, oftentimes people will think that they get off scot-free by someone saying, you know what, I'm just glad you're here. You look good. I just want you to keep doing what you're doing, and you take care of your family. Well, guess what? That ain't that easy. From now on until the moment that they throw dirt on me and I'm underground, I got to do exactly what they asked me to do. That's how I live out that amends. Okay? Oftentimes people throw around this word living amends. Most of the time people misconstrue that as, oh, well, I'm not going to go make this amends. I'm just going to go try to live by spiritual principles instead of having to go pay my drug dealer back. No, that ain't it. The living part of those amends is whatever they ask me to do, I have to continue to do it for the rest of my life. Right? So the awesome part about making these amends is that there's healing on both sides. Years of resentment, anger, fear, things of like that, they get melted away in a matter of moments, you know. And that is exactly what God does. And, to quote Tom Eye, I think he said, when faith and preparation collide, the results are what God does. And that's exactly true. All I do is suit up and show up to go make these things right. God takes care of the rest, you know. And the tail end of these amends, so many things end up happening, which end up being like a really, really cool deal. And I'll give you an example. Oftentimes, especially if we haven't seen someone for a long time and we're making these amends, someone may say, dude, what happened to you? You know, where have you been? So guess what? I now get the opportunity. This amends has now turned, you know, the amends is over. Now I get a time to tell in a general way what happened. I get to kind of tell my story. Now, I'm not talking about an hour long from the podium story, just in a brief way. I get to tell them what happened to me, you know, and how I got to the point where I'm sitting in front of them right now, trying to make reparations. There may even be times when someone will ask, what is this alcoholism thing? Because if you think about it, there's a world of misinformation out there. There's a world of ignorance, and I don't mean ignorance in a derogatory term. I mean ignorance as in, you know, without information or without knowledge. People only know what they see on TV or what they, you know, see in ads and things of that nature. So they might ask me, what is this thing about alcoholism? So the miraculous part, the work that God does is he puts me in a position where I get to bridge the division between information and misinformation. I get to lay out exactly what real alcoholism is. And guess what? Now there's one more person in the world that knows exactly what is going on with people like us, you know? And that's something that is just completely, you know, no words can even really describe that whenever something like that happens. But there's one more informed person in the world. So here, I throw down some notes real quick. Let me see whatever I was going to say. So whenever we meet some of these folks, one thing that we have to understand is that I'm not going to show up to them, as one of my buddies said, I'm not going to show up to these amends like I'm about to commit a felony afterwards. Leave the tank tops and the cutoffs at home, okay? I need to show up with, you know, as the best representative of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I can be. It doesn't necessarily mean I got to wear a suit or anything like that. I just need to look presentable, right? Because not only am I going there, you know, representing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, first and foremost, I'm going there as an agent for God. Right? And so I need to bear witness to what he has done for me. That means suit up and show up, right? And so moving into a couple of more pieces. Oh, yeah. Good old page 83. you see at the very, very top, it says, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. This is absolutely true. Sometimes this is not going to be an overnight matter. The damage that we've done to our family is extensive. I can't tell you how many times, you know, I ended up having to do a 10 step later on when I'm, you know, calling up my sponsors. Well, she ain't doing it right. You know, I already made amends. It ain't going to work that way. Right? It says we've entered a long period of reconstruction. We must take the lead, right? I need to go home and practice these principles in all of my affairs. And regardless of what they do, like the book mentions, whether they choose to live a life based on spiritual principles, that ain't my job. My job is to continue to bear witness to what God has done for me. And so sometimes this healing happens in God's time. And often, you know, for people who love us, you know, or we're close to, whether it's friends, family, something like that, sometimes they need to see us in action, right? If I just, you know, show up and make an amends, you know, 2 days sober, which, I mean, that's radical if you end up doing it, but they're going to be more concerned about what my feet are doing, right? Just like my sponsor was when I called him up on the, you know, in that moment of desperation, I'm looking at what your feet are doing because I've heard this before. You've said it before. Guess what? I want to see what your actions are doing because my actions speak so loud that you can't hear a word that I'm saying. So now I'm going to get into the tail end of some of this. So if you got a book, you're welcome to throw over to the bottom of page 83, right? Down here at the bottom, we have a series of promises. Now, I'm sure you've seen the lampshades, them hanging up there and stuff like that. People call them the promises. They're not the promises. They're the ninth step promises. There's prayers and promises all through the book, okay? Promises of what happens when I'm honest and thorough with this work. Promises of what happens whenever I'm not honest and thorough with this work. So these are the ninth step promises. So many times you'll see people come in, you know, to a meeting and these aren't the desire chip promises. You know what I mean? I don't pick up a desire chip and these things just start miraculously happening. I have to put in some work. I have to continue to take the action. So it says, if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We'll not regret the past, nor we wish to shut the door on it. I'll continue off on that sentence here in a little bit. It says, we'll comprehend the word serenity and we'll know peace. No matter how far down the scale we've gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity disappear. Remember that stuff back on page 52 when it asked us, is there anything more important than solving these problems than whether we see newsreels of lunar flight? Now they're getting into the opposite of this. Because by this time, guess what's about to happen? I'm entering the world of the spirit, as it talks about in the next paragraph. So let's finish up with this one. It says that feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, but they will always, now check this out, there's a guarantee, they will always materialize if we work for them. Betty Ford ain't offering a guarantee. You can see many sentences in this book that are guarantees. They will always materialize if we work for them. If I'm willing to be pulled up root and branch and be placed in new soil, right? To have the cup be cleaned out and to go through a thorough deep cleaning, right? To die the death of self before the physical death and be emptied out. Guess what? All sorts of remarkable things begin to follow. 2 seconds. So a couple of things that I probably didn't cover is that, you know, we want to make direct face-to-face amends, right? They're always direct. I'm not going to do it over the phone if I can't help it. I'm not going to send an email. I'm not going to send a text, right? Why is that? Because hitting the delete button is a pretty easy thing to do. What I want to do is I want to arrange a time. Now, the book talks about in the paragraph before some of these promises is that, you know, there may not be some wrongs that we can fully right. All of these amends are going to happen in God's time, but I have to be willing to continue to do that. And so I can tell you, at least from personal experience, about a few months ago, I was able to make an amends with somebody who up until this point did not want to see me. Did not want to have anything to do with me. And by God's grace, he put us together and I was able to, you know, to knock that out through God. And that's something that I probably wouldn't have expected. I usually try to work in the rule of three. You know, I'm going to call these people once, twice, maybe three times, and then I'm going to let it rest for a little bit. Pick it up again here a little bit later because I don't want to, you know, nag them. I don't want to hound them, that kind of thing. Guess what? There's another men's out there that I can probably be going to do. And that's where, just to touch on one small thing real quick, and then I'll probably end up closing it up, is oftentimes we've probably heard about having this experience, this spiritual experience as a result of the steps, right? As the result of the steps. Have I had a spiritual experience as the result of going through all of the work, right? All of the steps. Or have I had this spiritual experience as a result of just doing a portion of nine, right? Have I made all of the amends that I'm consciously aware of? Especially with the whole COVID outbreak, I've had scores of men call me and tell me that, you know, they're not feeling good. They're in a rough place. I need someone to take me back through the work. And, It oftentimes, you know, I'm not going to speak about going back through the step. That's not what we're talking about. But oftentimes people are seeking something else or using going back through the work as an excuse to not make these amends, right? Instead, they're trying to go back and get a different experience whenever they haven't had the first experience, if that makes sense. So have I made all of the amends that I'm consciously aware of, Have I done my utmost to make these reparations, to make restitution? It's an important thing to look at. And as we go end up going through the steps, something that we tend to find is this idea of spiritual pride. You know, I go out and I make some amends, and guess what? My external world looks better. I'm back in the big bed again, and you know, the dog's not barking when I walk in the house. Things are looking better outside. So guess what? I start letting up. I rest on my laurels, so on and so forth. And as quickly as we work through the steps, I end up working backwards through the steps. You know, I get a little bit of faith, but I haven't gone all the way. I haven't continued to plow the field. And so it's very important, once again, this is why sponsorship is key, is to continue to push some of our new guys to have these experiences and to knock out some of these amends, of course, in God's time. So in closing, if we look at it this way, back on 63, I'll turn it to my most favorite sentence in the entire book is here at the top of the page, two sentences down. It says, being all powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Now, when I was going through the work, my sponsor said, you read off in the margin, this is my job description till the day I die. My job is to stay close to God through prayer and meditation and perform his work well. We work in self-sacrifice for others. Because of that, I get absolutely every single thing that I need. Okay. This ties in to 9 through 12 later on. Okay. My job is to stay close to God, perform his work well. And because of that, I get all that I need. If I get all that I need, what else do I need? It's pretty dang simple. But the same thing could be used with fear, right? Oftentimes people use the old, you know, church slogan, well, God's not going to give you anything you can't handle. Well, my experience says otherwise. God will give you things that you can't handle. Why? Because he wants you to rely upon him, right? Which ties into that piece into inventory, which ties into the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, right? In order to get spiritually fed, my job is to continue to, you know, to go out there and do the things necessary to continue to stay alive, to give freely of myself so that others may live. And to finally wrap it up, no matter how far down the scale that we have gone, we'll see that our past experience can benefit other people. How on earth is that going to be possible? Well, back over here in the 130s, I'll find it real quick. Where does it say? Oh boy, 124. You know, oftentimes later on, and I've heard it from people of 3 years or even 30 years of sobriety. Oh, we'll always be powerless. That doesn't give me any hope, right? Now, will I die with this physical piece? Yeah, absolutely, I will. But guess what? I've gained great power in my life, the power to help others, right? I've recovered and been given the power to help others. So going down here at the bottom of the middle paragraph, it says, cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. Wow. That's a pretty cool deal. That sounds like great power. Now, is that power mine? Nope. That's God's power working through me. But regardless of the things that I've done in the past, I can be uniquely useful to someone out there who is dying just the way that I was. And each and every one of us, our own experiences are unique. Every one of us has a voice, right? Leslie's got a voice. Laura's got a voice. Paul's got a voice. We could all be at one place saying the exact same thing, but guess what? They're only going to hear it from Paul. They're only going to hear it from Leslie. They may only hear it from me, right? So that's why it's our job to qualify the newcomer, get them through the work rapidly so that they have this vital spiritual experience and they can go out and begin to affect the lives of other people so that they can give freely of themselves that other people may live. And with that, I want to thank each and every one of you folks for having me. Not quite sure what I said. Who knows? But either way, I love you all. And God bless you. Thank you very much for having me.